Welcome to Q&A Selling Online, with answers to questions about creating an online empire, promoting products, or building a brand. Your host, private label and e-commerce entrepreneur, Quinn Amorm.
So today, I had a question on Facebook, and it was, how do you pick a product to private label? Okay, so this, I know this has been answered several times by a lot of people, and a lot of people do it the same way, others do it a little bit different. So I'm just gonna tell you the way I do it. I use the tool Jungle Scout. I can put the link to it on the notes. Jungle Scout is a paid version. If you want a free version, you can use Rainbow Smasher. I'll put a link to it as well on the notes. So what I do is I go to Amazon.com, since it is the biggest market out there. I open Amazon.com. I search for the best sellers. If you're not new to this, you know by now you're thinking, okay, so that's the process that everybody uses. But then I tweak it a little bit. I find the best sellers, and then when I open those best sellers, I see products that are also sold with, or people, you can see in the bottom, it says people that bought this also bought, and then I look through those. And when you pull up these products that are also bought with these best sellers, now you open your Jungle Scout or your Rainbow Smasher, you open it up and it will populate on the page what each one of these sellers is selling on a monthly basis. These are calculations, sometimes they're not 100% accurate, but you have a good idea of what kind of what's happening there. I look at the number of the reviews as well, although that is not my main focus, is not the number of reviews, because if you're starting, you know you're gonna start with zero no matter what, any product. And there's people that have been selling these for years, and they could be professional Amazon sellers, but they could also be just a manufacturer of something that they know how to manufacture stuff, but they do not know how to sell it. So you always have a chance of beating people sometimes on their own game, right? Number one thing I look at is sales. Price too. I do not deal with anything. I mean, I still have things that sell for below $15, because when I started, I had a few of those and I just wanted to start low. But I do not like doing that. There's no profit to be made on products that sell for less than $15. I would say 20 or more. The $40 product, the $39.99, $39.45, whatever you decide. Those are, I think, the best range for profit-wise. You can make a good $10, $15 per unit sold. Again, I find these products, open the page, open, let's say, your Jungle Scout. Open Jungle Scout, let it populate. It shows me. I filter them by units sold. So the one that sells the most to the one that sells the least to the bottom. If it has good amount of sales, and I mean good amount of sales is when you see people selling thousands a month, you know those are a good amount of sales. I open the products and I go see them individually, each one of them. So I product A, let's say pencil sharpener, I open that pencil sharpener. I go look at the reviews and I read the reviews. I don't care for 1 stars or 5 stars. I read 4, 3, and 2 stars. Meaning, you know, the person actually wanted to give some input. 5 stars could be still the ones that used to be bought back in the day. 1 stars are disgruntled people that unfortunately you can find them everywhere. And instead of sending a message requesting a product exchange or something, they just went ahead and gave feedback, a negative one. And I do look at not every single one. If somebody has 1,000 reviews, I'm not going to read all 1,000 of them. I have better things to do. I will look at a lot of them and see what they think of that product, what can be made better, basically what they liked about it, what they didn't like. So I'll make sure, if now I'm going to make this product, I'm going to make sure that mine will have the things that people liked. And I'll try to fix some of the things that people did not like. So if out of, say, 1,000 reviews and I saw one person said, I wish this was blue, I'm not going to make a blue product because one person said so, right? I open, like I said, I put them by the one that sells the most to the one that sells the least. And I go through product number 2, I do the same thing. I open, there's another software that I use which tracks sales history. And it is Keepa. K-E-E-P-A. I'll put that also on the show notes. Keepa will track the history of every product. So how long it's been selling, what has been, how much it's been selling at. And just so you can see that this is not a product that somebody launched yesterday, did a giveaway of 100 or 200 units, and now they have a BSR of 50. You think that they're selling, you know, 10,000 a month, when in reality, they just sold 200 one day, or, you know, 50 one day, but they have no history from last week, last month, or a couple years ago. That's another thing I do. Again, I skim through the reviews, and if every single person on there has, you know, 1,000 or not 1,000, I really don't care about 1,000 reviews at this point. If there's 5 sellers and all 5 have 10,000, then it could be, you know, a bit harder. Nothing is impossible, but things do get harder. And nowadays, it's harder to start any product on Amazon. It's harder than it used to be 2, 3, 4, or 5 years ago. But nothing is impossible, because you don't have to have every single one of your products. Doesn't have to be the very first of the first page. It could be, you know, 5th on the first page, it could be 10th on the second page, and still sell a ton, because it's in every page that it is there for one reason, a search term. So the search term you entered, pencil sharpener, and if you show it first in the first page, means you're first for your main keyword or main search term. That's how you showed up there. You don't necessarily rank for, let's say, sharpen my pencil, I don't know, I just came up with this, on first of the first page. But a lot of people, you can be getting a lot of sales for that particular search term. And sometimes you don't even know that that search term is bringing sales to you. Brings me to another software that I use, and it is also paid for, and it is Sellex. And I use Sellex. Sellex, what it does, it does a bunch of different things. One of them, it can track keywords. You enter the keywords into Sellex, and it tracks you what position you show up for each one of those characters. And depending of how much you want to spend monthly with Sellex, it starts, I don't know, I think it starts at $50 all the way up to, I can't remember what the last one is. But again, I'll put Sellex link on the show notes as well. I'm not affiliated with any of these links. I am with Jungle Scout, so if you get Jungle Scout, you will buy me coffee. Where was I? Oh yeah, Sellex. So Sellex can track your profits. It can track most of your cost. It doesn't work for Canadian market. It works for the US, UK, Germany, I think. It tracks, let me see. Yes, your profit, your sales. Okay, PPC has a new feature for your pay-per-click. It tracks what search terms people use to actually buy this product. So when you have a bunch of sales and you say, I don't know, but you sold 1,000 units this month, you can go to Sellex and you open your report and you see what did people type in when, what they used to type in to actually find your product when they bought it. And when you know those, it could actually be something that you can use to change your title, your description, your bullet points, knowing that people actually search for these certain things. I'm moving a bit away from the question here, but so it is how I pick my products, and that's how I choose to see if it is a winner or not, is if people are already buying it on Amazon. So I don't invent the wheel, that's for sure. I don't go out there and try to make products that don't exist yet. I find products that already exist, products that people are already buying and buying lots of. I still fall under the category where you pick something small, light, and not too big, so it's not oversized, and because if it is oversized, not only you pay more for Amazon and long-term storage fees will be bigger, but it also costs you more to ship. Although I do order C-cans of product, I only have one product that is oversized. So I do look at that, how light it is, how small, things that can be folded. I actually decided to look into some inflatable stuff, and I quickly got away from it, because I saw too much trouble coming. But inflatable things, it would be perfect, because you can have something that when expanded is, you know, 10 feet long, but you can make it be tiniest, like, you know, a foot long or something when it's deflated. And that is great for shipping, because you save. Shipping works by weight and size, And when you have something inflatable, it's always tiny and light, right? So I make sure it sells a lot. Quality. It has to be something that if there's something that is selling a lot, but the reviews, I look at it, the average review is 3-star. Unless I can actually go and fix the problem, if there's a problem that happens constantly and that's why it's getting the 3-star or the 2 or whatever, if I can fix that problem, I will consider it, and I actually, that would be something good, because you can make it a winner by fixing somebody else's problem. But if it is something that I cannot fix, I will not go with this product. If it sells 10,000 a month, I will not, because the amount of returns that you're going to get from with a product that you know right off the bat is not good quality, it could ruin your reputation. And Amazon keeps track, and you should keep track too, of your reputation on Amazon. It depends. I don't know if you are selling on Amazon only, but if you want to sell on other platforms, it's up to you. But you should always look after your quality, just so you can actually build a brand and keep reoccurring sales. So after I pick a product, and now I know, okay, this is the product that I want. Personally, this is a personal decision. I need to somewhat like it. It can't be something that I look at and say, you know what, I don't like this product. It sells a ton, but it's just, maybe it's just me. But I need to be able to kind of relate a little bit. Not too much, right? Because if somebody tells me, oh, phone cases are, get into phone cases, and you know, I don't like phone cases, and I don't sell phone cases just because it's super saturated. But if I thought it was a really good business opportunity, I have nothing against it, but I have nothing in favor, but I will go for it. I'm not saying go for phone cases, don't sell phone cases, everybody else already does. I decided the product, and I say this is the product that I'm going to sell. I go to Alibaba, and I try to find not the cheapest. I don't try to look for the cheapest when I go to Alibaba. I go to Alibaba, and maybe I should put this on the show notes. I don't know how new you are, but Alibaba can be found at alibaba.com. I'll put it on the show notes just as a reminder. And I go to Alibaba, and I look for the most reliable source. It has to be a manufacturer. And I mean, not always. Sometimes there are resellers. There are people in China which their business is being traders. So they buy wholesale from all the businesses around them, and they will sell to us North Americans. And that's what they do. They're trading. So the good thing about dealing with traders is they know all about their business. They know all about Amazon. In some cases, they know more than we do. They know about the shipping. They know about what the real costs are, about that you need to put your Amazon barcodes, the FNSQ, you need to put them in each product. They know how to ship. It's just way easier. They do charge a tiny bit more for the exact same product because, again, they are a trader and they need to make money by trading. Don't set aside a company just because they are not the manufacturer of the product. I actually deal with some that are traders, and I really like dealing with them. It's just so easy. Their English is perfect, for one, because they will have people assigned to you that actually been, they know how to speak, they know how to write. Some of them can speak better than me, and they write better as well. That's what I do. Another thing to look at when you're on Alibaba is how long these guys been around for, because there are a lot of cases that you see in all these Facebook groups that some people do get scammed. So you got to keep your eyes open. Not every single brand new seller on Alibaba is a scammer. But if you go with somebody that has a star, the gold star, and it says this is a dealer on Alibaba for the last 10 years, of course you know this has to be official, because they can't sell anywhere for 10 years if they scam people, right? This, you can see the volume of sales. Alibaba has a bunch of badges, and you can see these badges. These people are official. They've been, another thing is when they get, I don't know the exact term right now, is when they send somebody to their manufacturing facility to actually verify. It's a verified facility, I believe, something like that. So where they check that this business actually exists, and it is where they say it is, and they build whatever they say they build. It's an assessed assessed supplier. So I'll check on it too. So that's what I do. Then when it comes to payment of these products, you know, you have to pay your products up front. You don't have to pay 100% up front. But what you're going to do is the terms with Alibaba, and you can use Alibaba Pay. And if you're in the States, you can actually pay with Visa. And it's super simple. In Canada, that option doesn't exist yet. I mean, it exists, but it doesn't work for us. You actually still go off to the bank and do what they call the TT transfer. So you'll get the invoice, go to the bank, do the transfer to this person, and you pay 30% is what you pay up front. Pay 30% up front. They start making your product with your logo. Obviously, you by now you have your logos already. You tell them, this is my logo. This is where I want my logo to be on the product, the packaging, the manufacturer. It could be, let's say, if it is this pencil sharpener. They build pencil sharpeners, but they don't build boxes. But you can tell them what you want your box to look like, the size of it, and they deal with all these packaging manufacturers, and they can do that for you at a super low cost. I have actually one package, which is amazing. I've had this product for a while, and every time I look at it, I'm still amazed how beautiful it turned out. So kudos to me. The design idea was mine, although I didn't design it myself. I used somebody, I can't remember if it was on Fiverr or Upwork, but it turned out, it was amazing. And it's 62 cents each, this my package. Where was I? About payments. Yeah, so it's super simple now. If you live in the States, it's super simple. You can pay your 30%. You pay it to Alibaba. The Alibaba collects those 30%. The manufacturer knows now that it's sitting on what you call escrow or escrow. And they start manufacturing these items. When they have completed your order, you have to pay them the remainder, 70%. And in this 70-30, you can have already, if you want, pre-negotiated with your supplier the cost of shipping to wherever you're going to ship it to, right? So by now, if you don't know how to know where your order is going to go to, if you're going to ship it to your house, fine. You know your address, of course. If you're going to ship it directly to, say, Amazon, you need to know what a warehouse to send it to. So what I do is I go ahead, I create my listing on Amazon. I don't need to put all the information on it yet. I just create the listing, and then I go send replenished inventory. And when you do that, Amazon will tell you where they would want you to ship this product to. So I copy and paste that address, send it to the manufacturer, and they can send directly to Amazon.com. Or if you live in the States and you want to send to the UK, you can use the exact same technique, right? Or Germany or wherever, even Canada. So you paid 70-30, like I said, you can include the cost of shipping in there. After you pay your 30 and they finished your product, what I advise is to get product inspected. There's a lot of inspection companies, they do this, and they cost between, you know, 70 to 150 bucks. It also depends on the size of your order and all that stuff, but it is worth it. They will go and they inspect, in the cases that I know, they'll inspect one in every four products, and then will give you a result. And if it failed, then they will go into a deeper inspection. If it passed, then it's up to you. It's fine. Send it that way. Your manufacturer will replace a product that had a malfunction or bad packaging or, you know, whatever the defect was on them. They will, or you can, at this point, you can jump out and say it's not worth it, or you can get them to remanufacture your entire order to your standards. Because what you don't want is order 500 of something, ship it to Amazon, and you know that every single unit is defective. Your account will be at risk, and your future will be at risk selling on Amazon, guaranteed. So you don't want that. Pay the extra 100 bucks, get a company to inspect it. And now let me tell you, if you're dealing with, I don't know if you are really dealing with phone cases, which are going to cost you 50 cents each phone case, and you ordered 100 of those, you can't it's just not feasible to do an inspection on something that cheap, because it's going to eat up every single bit of your profits. If you're in cell phone or cell case business, you can't really get inspections unless you're ordering thousands of units. Pretty much that's the process. Something I have to make is the standard operating procedures, and that's something that Amazon loves, is they call the SOPs, because down the road, me, you, everybody that starts an Amazon business, your intent is to grow it as much as you can, and then to kind of try to remove yourself out of the business and let somebody run your business so you can have the so-called freedom, so you don't have to work the 9-to-5, even if you are your own boss. Create SOPs. When you see something that is working, write it down. This worked, this failed. The things that failed, you remove them. Everything that actually worked for you, write them down. And now when you hire somebody or a virtual assistant, whatever you do, you can hand them these SOPs, and this is what they're gonna follow. And you follow those SOPs until they stop working, because eventually something will stop working. Amazon keeps changing, marketplace changes. There's constant change in this online world. So you gotta keep an eye on your SOPs and see when something stops working, and it will. You gotta now tweak them a bit or change them completely. Anyway, I believe that is all for today. Thank you so much for listening and for watching, for you on YouTube and Facebook. Thank you very much. Go out there and do something.